This program was first broadcast on Canterbury's access media station, Plains FM, and was made with the assistance of New Zealand On Air.
Welcome to Terra Nova Earth Talks. We speak with cutting-edge experts and wise elders from across the globe on the issues and action our Earth is calling for. Brought to you by the Terra Nova Foundation, driving environmental change through human connection and collective action. Welcome to Terra Nova Earth Talks. In this episode, we are talking our future. The future of the human race, the future of living beings, the future of this planet. Quite an enormous topic, infinite even. Now, you could say that the future is bleak, hopeless even, but that isn't technically true. Our future doesn't have an emotion. That is what a human's interaction provides. Given that the future hasn't happened yet, calling it bleak or bright is merely our perception of what will happen. The future is always ahead of us. Future, therefore, is a viewpoint, a forecast, an opportunity, a fate, a destiny, a possibility, a destination, a step onwards in the journey. It can be many things depending on how you look at it and how you approach it. We can look back to see patterns and predict what might happen next, but nothing is certain when we look ahead. So, how do we look at the future of our Earth? How do we approach it? Can the patterns of the past tell us anything of how we prepare, engage, and step into our future? If we tune into our Mother Earth, what does she say? If we honestly tune into ourselves, what are we saying? There is a lot of chatter, noise even, on the future of our planet, on climate change, extreme events, polycrises. The noise is loud, and it sometimes can be overwhelming. It can move us into thinking there is an inevitable future. Equally, there can be murmurings of restoration, redress, and new paradigms, and this can move us to thinking the future is going to be a lot better. But the future is not written either way. No matter what area of study, what work we do, where we live, how rich or poor we are, what we do today, what we learn from yesterday's and past millennia, and how we approach our future will have an impact. The question is not what the future holds and whether it's bleak or bright. The question is, what are we doing today? How are we preparing for tomorrow? And what approach are we activating for our future and the future of those to come? Now, there are people out there that have a specialist expertise in helping us to do this. They are called futurists. They are important in our society as they help us jolt out of the blindly waltzing into our future and instead enable us to gain skills in internal critiquing, considering alternatives, building participatory futures, opening up opportunities for transformation and change. Today, we are very fortunate to have one such extraordinary expert in the studio with us, Dr. Cheryl Doig. She is Director of Think Beyond, holds multiple prominent governance roles, and is a leading light on future thinking and approaches. She's an international speaker and author on complex change, strategic foresight, futures literacy, and leadership. Welcome to the studio, Cheryl.
Kia ora, my pleasure to be here.
Now, let's start talking about the future of our Earth and us as human beings on it. So, we don't have very many small questions today, I have to say. But let's begin with how you got into this area, as I can't remember there being a subject at school called futures or anything like it. So how did you get into this field?
I wish there was a subject like that even today. So I guess I've always been interested in leadership and innovation and change, so the complexity of different ways of thinking. But probably my real introduction to futures was when I was doing my doctoral studies through Griffith University in Brisbane, and I was introduced to a futurist called Richard Slaughter, who was running some of the programs there. And it just struck me that there was a whole body of knowledge, tools, methodologies that would really enhance our ability to think more widely and to make some of those changes happen in today's world.
Mm. And so that's quite a shout out to Griffith University in Australia, because I'm guessing they were a little bit ahead of the game if they were offering that kind of thinking and those opportunities.
Yeah, I think throughout the world there are people that are more expert in that field, and there are some really good people in Australia and globally. People like Sahil and Ayatollah, who's also in Queensland, and Marcus Bussey. There's a whole team of people, both male and female, working in that field and just contributing to the building of knowledge about future studies. And that's right the way from UNESCO to just small practices of individuals. It's really exciting.
Now, someone said to me once, you know, that Cheryl, what does she do? Exactly. How do you answer that question? Because I did answer it, but I would love to hear what how you answer it.
I ask myself the same question every morning. So what do I do? I support leaders at all levels to work through the possibilities of the future. Mm. And by that, my work is about anticipation, not prediction. Mm. So a lot of the work in the futures space is not about forecasting, but actually about foresight.
Right.
My work, if you're looking at forecasting, it's often based on past data.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
And it has an absolute place, but that's not the space I work in. So what I'm interested in doing, and what I do in my work, is look for the signals of change, look for the patterns, look for scanning the environment and trying to sense make for today and look at multiple possibilities. Because if we just have one approach, then something goes wrong, we're blindsided, and we fall off the cliff.
Because forecasting quite often is linear. One data set, and we predict, therefore, it's going to go in a certain way. And there might be a couple of variants that we chuck into the forecast, but it's often quite linear in that approach. So I'm guessing that doesn't encompass the much more, let's say, reality of what can happen next.
Yeah, well, I just look at it in terms of the weather. When I look at the weather forecast for the week coming up and I see it's going to rain and so I'll need to take my umbrella or whatever, but as it moves closer, suddenly all the rain's not showing on the weather forecast, even though they've based it on prediction and data and all the things that they do so well. And so there isn't one prediction that works all the time. So people don't have crystal balls, including me, and that's why the anticipation is it could be this, it could be raining, it could be fine. I need to be prepared for multiple futures, and that way I won't be caught out by the rain if it happens.
Absolutely. And some days in Otatahi Christchurch, where we are, you have to be ready for all weathers.
Absolutely, yeah.
How can we look at the future? Like, what do you help people consider? What's the, you know, it seems such an obvious thing. We know what the future is. It's just what's going to happen ahead. But how do you, like, break that down? How do you start to kickstart our brain to think a little bit differently about how we view the future?
Some people are really terrified of the future.
Right.
And they think it's pie in the sky, big cloud thinking, it doesn't have any practical purpose. And if it's not used practically, then I haven't done my job and other people in the future space haven't done their job. So how do I help? By, first of all, going back to the past, because from an Indigenous point of view, past, present and future are interwoven.
Mm.
So future isn't out there in front of us. We walk into the future backwards with all of our ancestry and our history behind us. And so I like people to consider, to start with, what were you doing, say, 10 years ago, 20 years ago?
Mm.
And what were the things, what was society like then? What was technology like then? What were you doing? And what decisions did you make then that impacted on you today? Because
right.
that's where the future comes from. It didn't just happen. We have a city that has a beautiful park and a whole lot of good things and some not so good things because of the decisions of our ancestors. And so by going back in time before you go forward, it just helps people understand their place in being a good ancestor for the future.
Yeah, so if I go back in time, I'm thinking, I always think about the choices I've made. Mm-hmm. Could I have made a better choice, you know, when I was 10, when I was 20? I'm not going to keep going because... but if I'd made a different choice, I potentially could be in a different place. Now, we won't get into fate today and destiny. but... I'm very aware that, for instance, I studied zoology at university. I went to university in the first instance. That was not a given for me at all. But I did choose to go there, and then I chose to study zoology. Now, that choice wasn't that conscious at the time. I enjoyed doing it at school, so I did it at university. But that took me on a journey that has given me knowledge and skills and opened me up to all sorts of possibilities. And I studied invertebrate, marine invertebrate zoology. So for any of you being New Zealand and nowhere Aotearoa Christchurch is, there's a beautiful place called Kaikoura, named after the lobster or crayfish in the area. And it's an extremely vibrant ocean ecosystem and rocky shores and so forth. And I got to go and study there. I mean, that's just idyllic, right, for somebody in their early 20s, late teens. And so that just opened me up to looking at my world in a different way that I probably would never have experienced otherwise. I mean, I go to the beach, but it's not in the way I was going to the beach there. Is that kind of some of the reflection that we need to look at as those interactions that we've had and choices we've made?
And it's those interactions that make you the person you are today, that have formed your character as well as all of your history, your family, the places you've visited. All of those help you think about what the future might look like from your perspective and what you might prefer, which isn't always what happens. And so I think part of the work in futures is also helping people to understand that understanding your own way of thinking, your own mindset, your own blind spots is a critical part of futures thinking.
Right. Okay. So let's talk blind spots, because that quite often comes up because we get used to the way that we think. And if we don't, I often talk about we don't have a reference point. If we don't have a reference point, then we just don't, it doesn't appear in our thought. So is that part of it? Is that to widen our reference points and to actually consider different things and to get our brain to kind of not be perhaps so narrow in the way it's looking?
Yeah, I think it absolutely is. And the more we can widen our experience, the better. I know that we, especially as we get older, our brains like to follow the pathways that have been set. And it's really uncomfortable to move out of those. It's cognitively more demanding. And yet it's really important to go to places that aren't areas that you know about or even that you believe in,
right?
That challenge your own thinking and get you in the worldview of other people so that you can sit and think, what is it that's leading them to think that and the future that would result in? And so that's things like reading articles, books, following people that you don't agree with.
Right.
Really exploring different possibilities, going to a conference that's not in your particular space, engaging with people that are from really diverse backgrounds, and that's where you get some of the rich conversations. It's also from a scanning point of view, when you're looking at changes to the future of your business or you personally, if you've looked at the environment widely from technological changes, social, environmental, learning, political, etc., and you combine all of those, you're looking for the things that don't seem to be anything related to you or your industry.
Right.
Because that's where these little pockets, these weak signals, as we call them, can be connected and something might come out of it that helps to drive a change in your business.
Yeah, right. So in the past, I've done quite a bit of work in diversity and equality and or equity, as I prefer to reference it. But and people quite often say to me, you know, you're driving for the boardroom to be more diverse, and but it's just a numbers game and people are just putting them in. But I would often say in return, if you see a business that embraces all different people, that there's the magic in that. You will see that business thrive because they've now opened up all sorts of possibilities for their business and they're getting critical thought from different angles and they're seeing, what did you call them? The
weak signals.
The weak signals. Yeah. So, and so it's not, it's about embracing the what I would consider the magic of humans and what we can offer as opposed to trying to, you know, make us more robotic in our business, you know, make everybody little mini-me's, which can definitely happen in our business. Mm. It's amazing when you see the different layers of management sometimes and you're like, oh my God, I can actually hear the people saying the same thing all the way through. If you open that up, then that's when you get a very vibrant business. Now, I'm guessing going looking forward, because the one thing that we have seen is the acceleration of some of the change in the world. I'm guessing this is becoming more and more important as an issue.
Yeah, I think the change seems to be accelerating, and there are different worldviews about what that looks like. Mm. One of the key trends is the whole notion of polarities, that you've got the extremes, and you'd think that it's black and white, but there are lots of people that just are in the middle. Mm. And part of the understanding is that there is that we each have our own truth, and we bring to the conversation our own beliefs, and so the more we can listen to each other and the more we can get that diversity, the better. And it's not just the diversity, but it's the inclusion into really listening deeply to each other's thoughts. And I think that's where our Indigenous people are much more connected with this future space. The whole term whakarongo, which really uses all the senses deeply, not just the ears, but our whole senses, bringing those thoughts to the place. I think that's a really important part of futures.
So whakarongo is a Māori word, which is often just interpreted as like listening or or something quite simplified. Yeah. But that's not actually a true translation. That often happens with English, I find.
Yeah.
And a lot of Indigenous languages often have these really deep meanings.
Yes.
So that deep dive into full body listening, if you like, through generations, that's really interesting.
Yeah. And I find with groups that want to learn about the futures is that they will get a great depth in understanding if there's a diverse group in the room. And so I've worked with groups that are from across industries, ages, ethnicities, religions, and the magic in the conversations really opens their eyes to others' thinking. And I think we need more of that in the world in order to thrive in the future.
So we, as it was, and I'm just reflecting myself as we're talking, in Otatahi, Christchurch, there was not a great diverse population when I was growing up. But that's different now. And I think that's true around the world. We have been moving as a human race into all pockets of the world. So the diversity globally is substantially more. But that doesn't, to go back to what you were saying before, that doesn't necessarily just happen, though, that you then get diversity of thought. You have to have that inclusion element. How does that inclusion bit work in practice?
I think it happens through exercising the inclusion muscle and realizing that just because you've got a group of diverse people in the room, that doesn't mean that they feel safe or that their voices are being listened to.
Yeah, right.
Yeah, and especially in this space, the voices of our young people are often not heard. They're often brought to the table because it's the thing to do, and they're given their little piece of airtime, but nothing is enacted, and so they feel hopeless in that sort of space. And so that feeling of belonging and reducing isolation, that the whole pattern of loneliness is one of the key trends that we're finding in society. And unless we can bring in ways of collaborating and intentionally creating bump spaces for that to happen, if we can't create that, then we're just going to stay in our own echo chambers, and technology really exacerbates that. It keeps feeding us the things that are like us.
Mm. That's someone spoke recently, and it really to me, and said they were talking about silent walking, and it and I was like, oh, what's silent walking? And that was walking without having headphones.
Yes.
Yeah. And like, oh, isn't that just walking? I think that also doesn't help, is that we're not that comfortable with silence so much anymore either. So I notice, and I can be a talker, as people know in meetings. I'm always consciously thinking about my contribution, and then ending it and allowing silence for other people to come in. But those are some of the skills that have to happen in a group setting, right? As opposed to assuming everyone's just going to fire up with what they have to say.
Yeah, and that's the art of facilitation, and where some of the tools of foresight that we use can help by encouraging everyone to have a say.
Mm.
So that whole participatory way of working is a critical part to ensure that all voices are heard, and therefore that if I have more agency and feel as if I have influence, then I'm going to be more hopeful about possibilities for the future.
Oh, that's amazing, actually. So it's intertwined with empowerment. If I feel really like I'm empowered to say something, then I can say it. So that's a critical piece then for people coming. Do you think, looking at future, coming back to the thing, do you think we lock in our futures? And when we take no action or simply carry on as is, we're actually locking in a certain type of future?
I'm not sure that we're locking it in. I think we're removing our power or influence over that. So there are still multiple futures that can happen, and we don't have control or influence over any of those big changes. But in the world of uncertainty, if we don't take any responsibility, then we leave it to the power of others to help decide our future.
Mm.
So if I choose not to take any responsibility and just do my everyday life and not connect to the future, there are still all sorts of things that might happen. It's just that when they happen, I feel as if I don't have any control or agency, and so I lapse into despair or apathy.
Mm.
And so some members of our society feel that because they don't feel any sense of influence or really want to be involved in the future. They're just trying to survive. And for some people, survival is all that they're doing. And it's really hard to think about the future if you're in the fight, flight sort of mode.
Absolutely. And I think that's, so survival mode, I shouldn't talk about the survival mode. When you're in survival mode, you do whatever you need to do to survive. And it's hard to do anything other than that at that point, because that's instinctive in us. Many people are not, and have that opportunity to engage and actually take up that thought process. Does it flow through then? If people aren't engaging and they're not thinking about their future, then I can see how then there might be links to actually them blaming someone else for the future that's not actually that great for them. Is that because we hear a lot of that around election time? We've just had, well, we have 3-year elections in Aotearoa, New Zealand, so it always feels like there's an election coming or going. But when it's around that time, people often immediately look to somebody else to influence what their future is going to be. So it's that disconnect, or maybe even dissonance in some instances. Does that flow through, do you think?
I think that's a loss of powerlessness.
Mm.
And so it's easy to blame other people when, and that's the reality for different worldviews. And, and so that's why the diversity in the room and listening to those voices really matters, and and seeing things from multiple perspectives. What is it that led them to feel powerless or to blame others? And how do we come to some sort of compromise or middle ground together? And and what does status quo look like? Or if people are talking about we want to go back to, that's often a longing for something and a sense of loss. And so in the future space, if you take something like meet, there are countries in the world, there are cities that are saying we're going to ban meat advertising, and others who are saying, well, we're going to ban anything that's lab-produced meat. And so you've got all these different things happening, and they're all of equal relevance to that place. It's just our worldviews and understanding that we all come from different perspectives. We can't always see things the same, but there are multiple futures that we create. And so that's why quite a bit of my work is in the creating scenarios of different futures that go from transformational through to adaptive through to status quo and not really any change, and also considering the dark futures and how each of them plays out.
Nice. Okay. So that's quite an important part, I'm guessing, because if you just have one future that you think is going to happen, then that can be very easily rocked. But if you're considering all scenarios, and particularly I'm finding this when people are talking about climate extreme events, it's not a either or. It's well, you can build your bunker if you.
You can.
It's going to be a really long bunker ride, if depending on how old you are. But rather than, because that's a direct linear thing, right? Bad stuff might happen. I'm going to build my bunker. But if you start to look at a whole range of futures that includes climatic events, then that starts to then open up possibility again.
Possibility, and to create certainty within the uncertainty. And by that I mean we live in uncertain times, but being agile and adaptive comes from having a worldview that looks at multiple scenarios. So if I've just got one and it doesn't happen, I've fallen over the edge into despair or chaos.
Right.
Yeah. And so the idea of multiple scenarios is, for some people, it's they choose a preferred one and they work towards that. But you have to consider all of them. It's like being a basketballer on the court. There's a whole lot of court play happening, and you've got to be aware of the whole thing and be looking for those signals where this might be coming to fruition, or to move some of these ideas, or be prepared for some of the futures. I just need to be tracking what's happening around a couple of key areas.
Yeah, that's interesting. I call them windows of opportunity. That like your weak signals, where you'd actually you're scanning. Well, I do. I scan constantly.
Yep.
Looking for where the window might be, and not having any predetermination of what that window might look like or when it might arrive, because if you do, then you're not going to see it.
Yeah.
So it's just constantly looking at that. That's if you see those windows, you're more likely to open them, I'm guessing, as well. There's a relationship between there. If you're open to different opportunities, not just one opportunity, and seeing when that might happen, that's quite limited.
Yeah. So from that perspective, futures is a mindset. So it's a set of tools and methodologies, and it's a way that you can embed it into your practice. But the understanding and noticing is a key thing, is constantly noticing things that happen and thinking, that's a bit weird, so, especially things that might be on the fringe. You just think that's a bit weird. But looking for other things that seem to be on the fringe and how they connect. And I think when we look at young people, and it's mentioned that they'll have multiple jobs or what that will look like, the more that they're looking at skills clusters rather than a linear approach to a job, the more prepared they'll be for the future or multiple possibilities in the future and to change quite quickly and easily.
Ah, so that goes full circle to what I said, there wasn't a subject at school. Arguably, this is the most important subject because it then could trigger the use of all the other skills into something rather than just purely learning a skill to do a certain thing.
Yeah, for me, it's that mixture of critical and creative thinking that is aligned to a futures mindset. And again, coming back to the past, present and future, all being interwoven. And our young people are craving this sort of conversation. And certainly in the gatherings that we've had in Christchurch, when Sophie Howe, the First Commissioner for Future Generations in Wales, was visiting, they just wanted to know how they could learn more about the future space and use that to try and influence in intelligent ways.
Mm. Nice. I was in the room for one of those future events, and the buzz was amazing. I think that's the other thing about this space is that there's a lot of energy to it. You know, it's not flat and it's not rote learning. It's actually the opposite. It's getting people to really open up. And those kids, amazing. And that was an incredibly diverse room of young people. Yeah. Really amazing stuff that was happening there. So do you do some of that as well? You obviously work with businesses and so forth, but do you work, that wasn't just a one-off, was it, scenario?
No, so I most of my work is bringing diverse groups of people to work, and so my work isn't youth specific. There are people that I team up with that do that sort of work, but youth are the great hope, and so the more we can help as what I call adult allies, the better. And there are programs across the world that are helping young people to be more connected to some of the futures conversations, and some of those are global ways of thinking and therefore connecting to other thinking around the world, so they get their worldview expanded, and that's a critical part of working in the future space.
Yeah, it's really fascinating how, and as you're talking, I'm thinking it really is like a foundation stone for many things, because you can apply this across not just work, but life as well, I'm guessing. If you've got different ways of looking at things and different reference points, then you can consider more deeply who you are and where you are in this world. It seems like a really fundamental thing. Is that how you see it?
Absolutely. So one of my passions is futures fluency, growing the number of people who have some sort of futures training or have the skills developed to take back to their business, but also to use personally in terms of personal change or the impact they have on the environment or areas of passion, because that's then influences back to their business and to the community. So it's all interwoven.
Yeah, I can see the sort of triggering of relationships across the board. of course, it's not always easy, I'm guessing, to do this, because some things can be super challenging. Like, there's such comfort in just thinking the future's going to be a certain way. I'm going to live my life like this. Everything's going to be okay. It is perhaps an area for a bit of courage. The bravery when we go into this.
Yep, I think so. And not everyone thinks that they want to look into the future or that understand the work that I do and other people in the future space. But increasingly, there's a huge conversation globally about futures and wanting to know, what is that? And will it help me to be slightly more prepared for an uncertain world? And the answer is yes, it can be. And certainly there's research in both business and personal futures that shows how it impacts on your ability to be more prepared or anticipating a range of futures and therefore be slightly comforted in the uncertainty.
Yeah, comfort in uncomfortableness.
Yeah.
Well, I want to move into a word that's often put with future, which is hope. So it's pretty entwined with our future, right? The idea of hope is always ahead in that way. How do you view being hopeful in terms of future thinking?
For me, hope is not always there.
Mm.
And so at various times I feel hopeful and other times I feel hopeless. Depends on the day and the time and what's happening globally and all of the sorts of things that are happening. And I think hope is a critical feature of being able to survive.
Mm.
If there's no hope, then that's when we go to dark places.
Right.
And so creating metaphors for the future that are more hopeful is a critical part of the work of a futurist. And you might say, oh, that sort of sounds a bit airy-fairy, but if you have a metaphor for something that you want to achieve and then you work on the steps to get there and you work through what would the headline be for us to get there and what would some of the initial steps be, that's when you can start towards and work towards a big idea, but not map out the whole process, maybe take one or two small steps and what we call sort of emergent strategy. Yeah. Like, I'm going to try something and I'm going to see how it goes.
Yeah.
And I've got this metaphor or this big idea of the hopeful future.
Yeah.
I'm going to do this one thing and it might work or it might not. And then I'll readjust rather than have a whole list of linear steps. And therefore, if a step goes wrong, I immediately fall out of hope into despair.
Now, I was probably one of those people, it's like when you said to me, it's a little while ago, I think, said about using a metaphor, and I was like, oh, yeah, this is cool. but I kind of thought, yeah, I wasn't convinced by it at the time until I actually did it. But one of the things about metaphor is it often brings in wisdom. So it can bring in insight from the past, especially if you've got familiar metaphors that you want to use. But it also is a visual reference, I think. And for me, I'm very visual. So to have a metaphor, which I then paint in my head, then I feel like I've got something that, not that I'm clinging onto, but at least I've got resonating in front of me. Is that also part of the value? And I know it was for me, but is it for others as well?
Yeah. My friend and colleague, Hafsa, she calls herself the optimistic futurist, and she has a metaphor that's to do with a Van Gogh painting, and she can describe what that looks like for her. So it brings a physicality to it. It's not just a sort of a big idea, but a metaphor can be something that also drives the change in your business. And so one of the futures folk in Christchurch who was working with meat inspectors, and they worked from the metaphor of meat inspector as a policeman to a meat inspector as a community constable.
Nice.
Right? And immediately that changes the questions and the methodologies of what you do next. So framing up the metaphor or just some sort of vision for what you want the future to look like then drives what you do next and impacts on the future that you create.
Now, one of the things that futures also is interlinked with strongly is change. So to go back to your point before saying if it's not practical, it doesn't do something, then you've done something wrong from a futures point of view. So tell me about the futures and change link. Is it instigating change? Is it assumed that we can make change? Like, what are some of the characteristics, if you like, of change? Now, I have a viewpoint on this, so to be transparent.
Well, I think change is happening all the time. It's the constant of the world that we live in, and we seek equilibrium, but we're always adjusting for the future. And so I think what futures does is potentially help you be more adaptive and agile for changes that might happen. It can be used as part of a change process, but for me it's more about connecting to all of the possibilities and therefore being more ready for the future being able to adapt to the change. So it's like a part of a toolkit that is in your kitty of resources to cope with the future and the changes that we don't know what they'll look like.
When I think of change, I'm always thinking about how I can do something that will affect positive change in the future. Now, I don't know whether what I do now will do that, but I'm always trying to get my best guess, doing the scanning and all the rest. So does that come into the future thinking too? Because, for instance, if we're looking at restoring an ecosystem today, then at best guess, tomorrow and for years later, there's going to be not just a good adaptation as a result of having that, but we're going to also have a lot of other change that is likely to happen because of engagement with that particular restoration project. So do you untangle that, or is it intertwined? Like, how does that kind of view on change sit?
I think what you're talking about is your preferred future. So there's a whole lot of possible futures, probable futures, and we sort of narrow it down to actually this is the one I prefer to see. Life's not always like that, and it's a good thing to have, as well as keeping the worldview of what else is happening there. So I think it's that being prepared for change and taking steps is important. And one of the critical parts of that in the future space is considering what the unintended consequences will be right from the beginning. So we use things like a futures wheel to say, if I'm going to do this, then these are some possible outcomes.
Right.
All right. Yep. And then if I do those, these are some possible consequences of those. And so you're digging deeper into the implications even before you start, because some of those changes will be positive, but there may be some things that spin out that are quite negative that you also need to consider.
Yeah, right. And so by thinking that way, you're then not creating, because the one thing I do notice too is when people have a preferred future, they can then start painting that picture whether it's happening or not.
Yeah.
Or just merely talking about that aspect of it that is convenient for them to talk about, as opposed to the whole thing, which is really important. So I guess they follow through then, as if you're looking at the whole possibility, then you're also acknowledging all those things coming to light when they do come to light, as opposed to kind of blinkering yourself going, no, it's not happening.
Yeah, and you've got people who think that technology is going to solve the world and people who don't think that think it's completely a human thing. So there's mixes of different futures that might happen in that space. For me, one of the things that you're talking about connects with intergenerational fairness, and there's a whole body of literature. There's processes for organisations and individuals to consider whether what they're aiming to do in the future, say your preferred future, is going to be intergenerationally fair.
Yeah,
and to critically ask that question before taking action for the future.
Right.
And so that's not just the young people, it's about the elders in the world, but it's also about those who are yet to come. And in Wales, going back to that as an example, that has resulted in some things not happening, like roads being built, etc., because it wasn't seen as intergenerationally fair. So I think there's real power in using it by asking those sorts of questions.
Yeah, that is amazing. And it just means that we start to be a bit more of a good, responsible human if we're asking those questions. I'm just thinking too that it doesn't just have to be human generational. It can be all living things on the planet, or the planet itself as well, I guess. Yeah, that's that's really fascinating. What I did want to shift into some of the things. There are some things that can happen in the future that are dramatic and overnight, but some things that take time. How do you help people to best transition to achieve a future where our Earth and us thrive? Is that part of the work that you're doing, or do you just say neutral?
I certainly have my own worldview. I think part of my role is to help those that I'm working with to uncover all of the things that are relevant to that change. And that's not talking about about an event that just comes, what we call a black swan. It was an unknown unknown, a zombie apocalypse sort of thing. But to look widely and be as prepared as you can. You take something like COVID. That wasn't a black swan. That was something that was thought of and prepared or not, or put to one side. And so...
For many, many years. Decades, in fact, yeah.
Yeah, and so, but the more we can help each other and organisations and individuals to be constantly looking out, especially outside their industry, because what often happens is that they get blinkered and they think, well, great, I'm in the apparel industry, and so I want to know what's going to happen in the world for apparel in 10 years' time. Well, that's immediately narrowed down to there's still a whole lot that can be done in terms of better use of technologies and being much greener in approach and so on, just within the industry. But there's a whole lot of other things to do with social change and population and the use of smart clothing, a whole lot of things that are actually going to influence the world and may mean that they don't have a market in 10 years' time because things have moved and they haven't.
Yeah, right. Okay. And that's something I think, coming back to the young people, the Taranaki youth are change makers. They're really...
That's exciting.
Yeah, they're constantly thinking of these possibilities, right? It's almost... feels like a stronger characteristic than I would have had at their age. I don't remember having been so open to possibility like they are. It's quite. Is that what you've found as well?
I think there's a greater sense of urgency and feeling that they want to have a say. And coming back to your group and other young people, they just need support to work out how to do that effectively. So there is a one of the trends is the rise of the citizen and the power of the citizen to make a difference. And not everyone likes you. You take the Greta Thunberg of the world, that one young person could make an impact, whether you agree with her or not. That would never have happened in the past. And social media has certainly helped to create those networks a lot more strongly for good and bad. And so I think our young people are thirsty and they need our support to sometimes get out of the way, but actually to walk alongside and help them to be responsible connectors for the future.
Yeah, and I think so we have mentors for our change makers. That's a key part of it. And one of the key parts of that when I'm speaking to someone is you've had experience, you've had knowledge, you may have insight, and if you're even more fortunate, wisdom.
Yeah.
So you can bring that and apply it to this energy, even if you haven't done it in that way in your own life. That doesn't matter, because you bring something that can only surely help in that wider consideration, going back to what you say in the very beginning, you know, those different perspectives and different ways of looking at things, which they just simply, if I'm thinking of someone in particular, she's 21 years, you can only do so much. Someone who's 60 has said, you know, three times as much time to experience all a whole range of things. So that feeding into that wonderful open mind and space is quite amazing to see, to be honest. You see these interactions, and both are benefiting, of course.
So what I was just going to say is that whole move towards reciprocal mentoring is critical. So if I was working with a 21-year-old, I'd just have so much to learn from them as well. And that's where, yes, you might have some wisdom or not an older person, but they bring such a different worldview and experience that the richness is actually in the collaboration of the two.
So we have all the ingredients for some pretty amazing magic, don't we? When we get these different generations at this time with the conditions that we're currently in, it feels like I'm already looking at a positive future. But it does look like the possibilities really start to open up when we look at it like that, as opposed to just, oh, these guys are in power and we can't do anything about it. That's a completely different way of looking at the world.
Yeah, and I think there are people who think that we are just driven by politics and politicians and we have no say. And then there are others who say, you know what, in my community, in my small space, I'm going to rise up and do something positive. And they're both important. You go back to the pace layers of long, slow paces of government and legislation, etc., and the fast pace of our young people rising in terms, and not just our young people, but the opportunity to influence in your own little community and therefore make a difference, that sometimes politicians and bigger organisations notice because you've just got on with making a change in your small part of the world.
Yeah, nice. We're almost, and gosh, the time goes quick. Yeah. I have a final question, which we ask everyone, which is, and we ask because we have amazing people like you in the room. What action can people take as an individual to help affect the world going forward to Mother Earth?
Yeah, I think the most important thing is to begin. And so that means noticing what's happening around the world and what small part of that you would like to change. It also means looking outside of your own echo chamber and exploring all those things that are really different from your worldview and getting into an uncomfortable space and learning from it.
Nice. And there's a lot of ways that people can do that too. Have you got some examples?
Look, it can be as simple, if you're near a library, going and picking up a magazine that's in a whole different sphere of expertise, and or to go to an exhibition, a free something in your space that's a gaming tournament, and wondering what on earth that language is that they're sort of even talking in, or going to a different space in the city, somewhere that's not your normal part of the place to inhabit, and just seeing what's happening and looking around. And it can be online, going to different spaces and following people who you really are averse to, and just sitting in that space of uncomfortableness and thinking about why it makes you feel uncomfortable, because the first challenge is always to think about your own worldviews and what brings you to this place from your future in order to impact on, from your past in order to impact on the future that you help create.
Oh, that's wonderful. Thanks, Cheryl. That's a wonderful way to end this podcast. If people want to get in contact with you, easiest to link with you, connect with you on LinkedIn. And we will be sharing on our website with the podcast details, your Think Beyond website, and other related links that we've talked about today as well. But And to emphasize what Shaw's just said, just try it, get in contact, drop an email, connect with her, and begin the journey for our future. Thanks so much, Cheryl. Lovely to have you here in the studio.
Thank you so much.
Bye
for
now.
Thanks for listening to this episode of Terra Nova Earth Talks. For more information on the content and links from this podcast, go to the Terra Nova website. That's terranova.foundation. To listen to other interviews in this series, go to the Plains FM website. That's plainsfm.org.nz. Search for Terra Nova Earth Talks. Also on Spotify or Apple Podcasts. Bye for now.